Morning Cyber. My name is Joe Flower, and I'm joined by
Justin Robinson, Rogue Security. How are you, Joe?
I am very well. Very well, thank you, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It is, well, it will be Friday for all of our listeners, so I'm going to be excited about that when I'm listening to this Friday morning.
Sounds good to me. I agree, that's the best way to do it. So, busy week. How's it been so far?
Very busy week. A lot going on. I think what the theme that I'm starting to see is that the stuff that we talk about from one week to the next is literally still going on, and more information is coming out and more relevant information. So I always find that interesting.
And I somewhat feel as though there's a plague of the same, not just like you're saying the same news stories are carrying over, but it's just the same things are happening again and again to different companies as well. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I'm pretty sure last week we were talking about the Garmin situation, and I'm pretty sure it's only just been resolved or somewhat resolved in the last 2 days, has it not?
Yeah, and that's really, there's the more and more information that comes out on this one, the more and more disappointed I think I am. I believe the suspicion is that they paid the ransom or they got the decryption key, but they haven't said they paid the ransom, but generally you get a decryption key by paying a ransom, so
yeah,
we'll just have to wait and see.
I saw that Sky News had posted that they had obtained the decryption key, and it's exactly what you said. Everyone was saying that, look, the only way they would have got it was to have paid the ransom. I'm pretty sure the ransom was $10 million it was set at. But the most interesting part of this that I wanted to get your opinion on was the fact that they know who this guy is. Like, there were pictures that were posted, and there were pictures of him posted with his custom Lamborghini that's worth like 250,000 US, right? And the license plate, I kid you not, translated to thief. Now, he's head of this kind of conglomerate that call themselves Evil Corp, based out of Russia. And what is the jurisdiction there? Like, Garmin, kind of American company. What is the jurisdiction? What can the Americans do? I'm not saying they should retaliate by any means. My point is, what happens? Is there kind of some body, a body of people that decide that it's worldwide hacking here that's going on, and we'll bring that person to justice? Or what happens? Is this guy just safe in Russia?
I mean, so literally, I mean, you've got different law organizations, law enforcement organizations in the US, obviously, and like the FSB in Russia. Evil Corp was like, this, the individual, like the leader, was indicted, I think, like last year. And like you said, he's enjoyed a pretty free life in Russia. He made quite a bit of money, and I think I'd put Russia in one of those states, nation states, like China and Iran, that leverage individuals, security individuals in their nations to assist with certain things like this. So, I mean, they look at it as a disruption to U.S. politics, U.S., you know, in an already very tenuous time. This is almost like I wouldn't even be surprised if Putin himself gave him that Lamborghini. And I didn't say that, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I suppose that could be the case. There's not much else to say, really. So the Garmin situation, just for all the listeners, is pretty much well and done. But there is a lot to be learned for other organizations. I mean, we're not just talking $10 million here either. We're talking the three-day outage that has caused a hell of a lot of their reputation to be diminished. Oh, yes. And also the production was down for that period of time. Now, I'd like to kind of move on quite swiftly, because as I said, there has been so much happening just so far this week. And one of the things that I know that you specifically want to talk about, Justin, is the National Trust. So the British kind of a body that look after the wilderness, I suppose, or the forests and parks and the kind of houses as well. So the heritage sites that you've got national heritage, and you've got National Trust. The National Trust is kind of like the grounds, if that makes sense. So it's kind of like Parks Canada. So like that, but they joined a group of victims of this black-browed hack. Now, I don't understand what this is. I haven't read into it because I want to hear it from you as to what you have made of it. So what is it?
Yeah, so it looks like they were able to obtain email addresses and names from an alumni database. So I guess what had occurred is, I guess Blackbaud, it must be a US or a UK company. Oh, South Carolina. Interesting.
Yeah.
So they had their information systems hacked. They are sort of this, company that provides, I don't know if they call themselves an MSP, but they're a cloud computing provider. So they would provide like large data servers and really, really specialized technologies, but cloud-based. And cloud is just a huge target right now because, as we spoke, I think we talked about this on a previous episode, the cloud is just, you know, essentially a computer. It's a little more complex than this, but it's essentially access to a computer directly from anywhere on the internet if it's not configured properly. So in the case of a database like this, it seems like you'd probably want to restrict it to certain access from certain locations, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be some really interesting things that are going to come out of this, but this is a good example of like a third party attack, right? It's okay. You're leveraging. So all of these organizations weren't directly attacked. It was Blackbaud who controls and manages all of this data for all of these nonprofits and foundations and education institutions and healthcare organizations. So we don't even really know the full impact of this yet, but it's going to be huge. And what's very interesting about this especially is that this qualified as a breach under like the GDPR guidelines. But it doesn't have to be reported in the US because it doesn't meet their guidelines, because we have nothing, the US or even Canada has nothing like GDPR.
No, and I must admit that's something I find incredibly odd, is that here in Canada, there is nothing like the GDPR that I got used to in England. So, I mean, to put it bluntly, GDPR is just how it always should have been. You can't pester people unless they've given you their permission to be pestered. It was a big shock for me, having been in England while the GDPR came in, and nice. Receiving all the emails from companies saying, look, you either opt in or you opt out. And if you opt out and we then send you a message, we could be in a lot of trouble. And I remember I came here, and Katie and I went into a shop, and she wanted these Blundstone boots. But at the time, she didn't have her phone with her, so we had to log my email address as the contact for this company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get the receipt sent to us, okay?
Right.
Every day for the last good year and a half, I have received an email from this company. And all my attempts of telling them to stop by sending messages like unsubscribe and please take me off of your database have come to no avail. So it's just very odd compared to coming from the environment in England where it's very staunch, don't send emails if people don't want them to. Yeah, sure. accept all cookies on every single website possible in Canada, because they have the right to do so. So yeah, I mean, that makes a bit more sense now. having listened to you about that Black Belt stuff.
And just those, for those who don't know what GDPR is, it's the EU, so the European Union, General Data Protection Regulation. And it's basically a privacy regulation. Nothing like it has ever been created anywhere else in our history. It allows for really impressive things that, you know, some governments' legislations have, but this is probably the first one that brings them all together and includes really good things like you really have to consent to give your information. People just cannot obtain your information and use it. If they do, it's against the law. If data breaches occur and your information is included, the big thing with GDPR too was the steep fines for companies who end up having data breaches. I was working at a financial, like a global financial institution with offices in the UK and all over the EU, and it was like, I mean, there was some, there was like Brexit level panic, and then there was GDPR level panic.
Yeah.
GDPR level panic involved having to stand up an entirely new team just to be able to deal with it.
I just remember being sat there and being told, look, we've got a meeting coming on this Friday. It's our GDPR meeting. You have to be here and you have to listen, especially in the kind of recruitment sector. If we messed up, the company we work for would be liable the incredible amount of money that they could be fined. I mean, I remember there was a couple of big stories that hit the headlines. I'm going to have to check which football club it was. I'm pretty sure I know who, but I don't want to get it wrong and be slightly slanderous. But one of them, in their ticket sales procedure, when they were sending a kind of a message out to everybody that bought a ticket to the game, bear in mind the average crowd in the Premier League, you're looking at about 40,000 people that have bought a ticket or are going to the game. They CC'd everybody in on the email. So everybody saw who else had bought a ticket to the game and they had access to their email addresses. Now, and that is all it takes. And the thing is, the EU had to then set precedent. So I'm going to find out who it was and I'll put a link to the story on the website for everybody to have a look at. And we'll kind of go from there. So there are a couple of things I wanted to discuss with you, Justin, kind of like as a follow-up, I suppose, to the stuff that we have been discussing over the last couple of episodes. I mean, we were talking about the Twitter hack, yeah? I saw the other day that it didn't just happen when we thought it did. It was actually going on for a little bit more than this. And Twitter seems to have not been as secure as we all thought. So there's a connection of mine on LinkedIn called Stephanie Drysdale. She's a vice president of cyber at a company called Prescient. Okay. And she posted, before hack, Twitter contractors were caught spying on users, including Beyonce. Now, this article can be found on Bloomberg. And it's very in-depth as to how this was the case. But Twitter has actually struggled for years to police the growing number of employees and contractors who have the ability to reset the users' accounts and override their security settings. So I remember this was being spoken about before. The CEO, obviously Jack Dorsey, and the board had been warned multiple times since 2015 when it first happened. And he actually mentioned this in an interview. And there were quite a few of the other employees that have since left Twitter who made it very clear that he had been warned on even more occasions than we first thought, and that there was a significant oversight when it came to the amount of people with access to everybody's accounts. So the question is, the reason this stuck out to me was obviously recently I've been working on a lot of IAM positions, as you and I have been discussing. I've been learning a lot from you in regards to these, and that revolves very heavily around the user accounts and accessibility. So that's why this kind of stuck out to myself. And well, one thing, would you be able to explain to the listeners IAM in general, just as like explain, because from my, if I was to do it in layman's terms, when you work for a company, you have access to a number of different accounts. Something goes wrong, you have to leave. The company then has all of these accounts to shut down to make sure that you're not involved anymore, correct? But is that right?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So then on a large scale, i.e. Twitter, who had 1,500 employees leave in the last 3 years, would have to do this on a huge scale. So that's where I suppose the issues would come in if they hadn't got the process down pat, and that's where these kind of people would get access to stuff they shouldn't have, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So IAM, identity and access management. So it's that broad categorization of how do we make sure that the individuals who do the work have access to the systems they need, only the systems they need, and when they need it, right? So that's a 15-second pitch for identity and access management. So, okay. You know, a company like Twitter, I would have to believe would have probably a team of people, or at least a single individual who would handle identity and access management for the organization. Now, the challenge is that it's once you start to get into access management and the use of different applications, like you mentioned, each one of those different applications may have a different account depending upon how you have it set up. Maybe it's a single sign-on, which is convenient but even less secure, because if I can get into one account, I can get into all of the accounts. But that's obviously not as simple as I make it out to be. So it really comes down to, and really back to, and if I could simplify it in a really given way, it's that, you know, I think they're calling this an insider threat.
Okay.
And, but what this insider threat really is, because the term insider threat is very negative. But I mean, if I'm an analyst at Twitter, or if I'm a contractor coming in to, you know, write, you know, a single function for Twitter, the web version, I might get a little curious if my developer access also lets me do a little search for, you know, the private account of Beyonce, right? That's a very, 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 very common thing. And this is a very, one of the first things you learn in security when you go into information security is the separation of duties, you know, the principle of least privilege, which all comes back to the IAM space, the digital identity space, and just making sure that you only have the access rights that you need. And that there's a level of control between, you know, if somebody needs, there should always be, you know, an access level that somebody can get to without giving them too much. And unfortunately, that takes a lot of effort. And we can't all have individual access levels, so we get as best as we can. And unfortunately, we now see what can happen when, like, the other controls you may have in place don't work.
I see what you mean. So, to kind of summarize then, one of the main things that Twitter need to do going forward is just be really careful who they're giving access to. Because a contractor, in my opinion, shouldn't get full access regardless without being supervised. It's one of those difficult situations, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, like, does the attackers in this case got socially engineered into some employees' accounts? Like, does that employee need access to be able to do what they were able to do to those accounts, right? Like, does a billing analyst need access to the password reset tools, right? Think about it, and you can kind of think about it in those kind of use cases.
Okay. Now, I know you and I were talking about quite a lot of different news stories this week. So, I mean, were there any that you wanted to bring to the table? Because I know that there's one that I wanted to ask you about in further detail.
No, I don't. Nothing particular. So I'm curious what you got.
Well, there was two today that kind of stuck out that I wanted to just kind of get your opinion on. Number one is a post that came from securitybrief.eu, which is just kind of a website that's a touch point, I suppose. Don't know the reliability of said website, but it said New Zealand have been named amongst the most vulnerable countries at risk of a cyber attack. Now, that's according to NordVPN. Okay. So over the last couple of days, NordVPN has been in the news for being not the most secure or trusted virtual virtual portal network. So I feel like I don't know how how much I believe of this, especially when I read a couple of posts about fake news, because it's quite funny, everyone throws that term around, but not many people actually understand what it means, fake news. But here it states that NordVPN have created something called a cyber risk index, according to them.
Okay.
Iceland, Sweden, the UAE, so United Arab Emirates, Norway, the United States, Singapore, Ireland, New Zealand, Denmark, and the UK are more attractive targets for cyber criminals. Now, obviously, we can all understand as to why the US and the UK are on there. And the UAE, I suppose, quite a high net. Kind of high worth as countries. They pull quite a few strings, that's for sure. And then obviously Sweden and Denmark, I kind of get that as well. There's a lot of money around there. Singapore too. But it's the smaller countries that people would be confused about. For example, New Zealand and Ireland. Do you think they're just involved in this because they are seen to be slightly smaller? Like, do you think people think that it's easier to get through them?
Maybe. Yes, I would say yes, that's probably part of it. It's interesting because New Zealand, I wouldn't say like they're top-notch cybersecurity, but they're not terrible, right? But the same thing with the UK, obviously, like if they're a target and you know that they're not doing too badly when it comes to cybersecurity. I think it does come down to a lot of different factors, because I don't believe that in a lot of cases, unless it's a nation state attack and they're going after like country to country, most attackers are interested in, you know, making money. So it's where are the targets at? So, you know, like it's what's New Zealand's cybersecurity policy when it comes to the construction industry and stuff like that. Like this is the level of research that attackers will do, especially nation states, right? And it could be maybe it's intellectual property, maybe it's so data, right? So there's your data breaches. Usually they put ransomware because they can make a little money off of it now. So usually they're generally one and the same, but information and data is so much like worth so much more from country to country. But then you also have like the levels of your standard phishing attacks, and those are generally monetarily motivated almost 100% of the time. But
okay,
it's really interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting.
So I mean, there were a couple of other things. Obviously, you've got the classic dating apps that have been hacked. and one of them was OkCupid. I don't know if we had gone into detail about this, but yet again, it's just showing that what you send on these kind of sites, just don't be silly with it. Don't send something that you wouldn't want somebody else to see, I think is the best way to describe it. And it seems to be happening more and more at the moment, with people just kind of thinking that they're all safe. There was that website that I sent you this morning. Let me see what it was. It ClearScore. That was something that I wanted to have a discussion with you about and just see what your opinion was, because I understand that you're thinking of spinning something up quite similar to the Canadian market. Is that right?
Yeah, so Rogue Security, we do virtual CISO and personal cybersecurity. So part of personal cybersecurity is making sure that your digital life is safe. So that includes your social media, your devices, and obviously the dark web is, you don't see it, you don't hear a lot about it, other than it exists. But it, you know, it's a real thing. And a lot of data gets moved around in the dark web, and it's beginning to be monitored just as much as the web that we see.
Yeah,
but it's a lot harder to do. So that's why services like this can come into play. And
yeah, okay. That's, I mean, it's quite funny, isn't it? Like what we see. That's quite a big topic, I think, that we should go into maybe next week, is in regards to just what is the dark web. Mm-hmm. There's so many videos out there that are just incredible, TED Talks wise, of what is the dark web. So I think what I'll do, Justin, is I'll get a link across so we can put it up on the website to one of my favorites in regards to that, because it just shows that the internet that you see is the tip of the iceberg, and there is just so much going on that we don't see. And I always remember when I think it was Tor browser. Was it Tor that you used to be able to get into stuff on?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So Tor is the network that, so it's the Onion kind of network, and Tor is the protocol that all of it occurs on. So it's a little technically complicated, but it's a lot harder to search, and there's a lot more encryption, and it's a lot more harder to track where the, or like where, when I visit a website in the surface web, you know, they know basically where I'm located based on my IP address. That's why we use VPNs, but it's a lot harder to do with the dark web, but it's not all that simple. And there's certainly levels of trust depending upon, you know, the context. But yeah, that would be an interesting conversation. I'm sure we could probably spend an entire show talking about that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we should. I think we should, because if anything, I'm going to learn a lot from you as well as the listeners would. So last week I promised that we'd do a bit of a quiz for you. So I found a quiz, and I didn't know the answers to these. It's actually quite interesting, and it's everyday kind of knowledge for people to learn about cybersecurity. So there's 10 questions, and it's up to you how many you want to do today. We could do maybe three every episode for the next couple of episodes, or how do you want to do it?
Let's start, and depending upon how much I talk, maybe that will be the determining factor.
Well, it's multiple choice, you see, so I don't know if you're going to be able to talk too much. So the first question, okay, everybody sees this at the start of their URL, but they don't actually know what it is. I didn't know what it was until this. So what does the https://// at the beginning of a URL denote, as opposed to HTTP, I think it's colon, /// without the S, okay? Now, the options you have here are that the site has special high definition, information entered into the site is encrypted, the site is the newest version available, the site is not accessible to certain computers, or none of the above?
That's a very good question. That's and you're right. We do see that a lot, and it's becoming more and more obscure. In fact, I'm looking at Google right now, and they even hide that part of the URL now.
Yeah.
Which has actually been a very Interesting thing. But my answer is going to be B. I believe that the hypertext transfer protocol S or secure indicates that the communication between your browser, so your computer when I'm visiting the website, and the server that that website is on is secure. So when I'm entering my credit card on the website, I know that when I hit that submit button and it goes from my computer over to the website server, because it's never there until I hit submit, then I know that it's getting there securely. And that's what that means.
Right.
So it doesn't mean that you're like without risk, because if somebody's on your network and they're listening to your computer, they may be able to get that. But it's kind of from your, let's say not for, yeah.
So it's just we'll basically, that's why the lock's there. Like that picture of the lock that comes up.
Exactly. So before, browsers used to alert you when something was secure.
Yes.
Now they tell you when something is not secure, which is great. I do like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. So I've just clicked the answer that you said. So it's come up with the next question.
Okay.
So I think what's going to happen here is it's going to be a case of 10 questions, and we're just going to have to go through them. We'll go to number 5. We'll make a log of the questions that you've done, and then maybe do the next 5 next week, and then be able to say which ones you got right or not. Or we'll just wait and see. We'll see. So question 2, which of the following is an example of a phishing attack? Now, before we start, Justin, you got me last week with a phishing attack. And so the first thing I did was send it to somebody else and say, I don't trust this. And as I said that, I clicked the link and it came up with, you have been phished. And there was a picture of a person, and I'm assuming it was supposed to be myself, with a fish hook in them. So the person that I sent it to replied with, that smells incredibly fishy to me. So I'm trying to learn so you don't get won over on me yet again. But so which of the following is an example of a phishing attack? 1, sending someone an email that contains a malicious link that is disguised to look like an email from someone the person knows. Creating a fake website that looks nearly identical to a real website in order to trick users into entering their login information. Sending someone a text message that contains a malicious link that is disguised to look like a notification that the person has won a contest. Or all of the above, or not sure.
Oh, the not sure option would be the easy one, but I think we're going to have to go with all of the above here, Joe. I believe that all of those are just different types of phishing. We get it via our phones now because they're linked to us via email, via phone. You know, we have vishing, which is voice phishing, and wailing now. It's out of hand. It's out of hand.
Oh, I know. It's quite funny, to be honest. Some of the attempts that I've had against me, I've actually had to laugh at them. I remember there was this one guy that sent me a message saying I'd won a contest and I'd won $1 million. And it clearly didn't happen because I hadn't put in to win anything. So the next question, question number 3, a group of computers that is networked together and used by hackers to steal information is called a botnet, B, a root kit, C, a DDoS, or D, an operating system, or E, not sure.
So this is a botnet. So network, a network of bots, essentially. And if you think about, you know, the idea of the question, it makes sense. Botnets are really used to like distribute malware. They're like your IoT devices, like your those, some cameras will host a botnet, which is interesting. So there'd be a botnet of webcams that will, webcams is not you know, the perfect example, but basically they're doing their function, but they're also running this little piece of code that's allowing them to do some interesting things online.
So, I mean, the next question, I've skipped a couple because they were picture questions, and the whole sharing, I mean, going through the picture questions is going to take a little bit longer, considering you're not sat next to me this morning. You're sat at home. This is via a online call, which I'll not name which platform we use, to be honest, because anything can happen. So criminals access someone's computer and encrypt the user's personal files and data. The user is unable to access this data unless they pay the criminal to decrypt the files. What is this practice called? I know the answer to this one, surprisingly. A, botnet. B, ransomware. C, driving. D, spam. Or E, none of the above.
So I want to hear your answer first.
But it's ransomware.
Yes. Exactly. Very common. And I'm glad. I think what that tells me is that that's just becoming more normative. Like, that now just a word that people understand, which is fantastic to hear as someone who genuinely cares about what I do. And it's just nice to know that, oh, okay, the conversation is like, it's there, it's happening. It takes a little time.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, the reason I remember the term ransomware was because there was a guy who I follow on LinkedIn, and he posted a joke, which was, why couldn't the police catch the hacker? It was because he ransomware. So it was.
It doesn't matter how you remember. I don't care as long.
No. Okay. So yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So right. This is a bit of a long-winded one.
Okay.
Private browsing is a feature in many internet browsers that lets users access web pages without any information, like browsing history, being stored by the browser. Can the internet service providers see the online activities of their subscribers when those subscribers are using private browsing? Now, before I hear your answer, because it's either yes or no,
mm-hmm.
I don't trust that they can't access it. I feel as though they know exactly what I'm looking at. I'm always in private browsing regardless, because I remember way back when someone said to me, just do it anyway. But now I feel like there was a couple of news stories that I heard where people were saying some government body had gone to one of these companies. I'm not going to name which one because they refused to give the information across at the time because it was private towards their client, for example, the customer that was using their portal. And they wouldn't give them the information due to it being in the private browsing side of things. Now, can they see what you're doing?
120%. Yes, that is definitely yes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, is it just a power trip?
So if you really think about what's happening, the internet goes through the wires that they control. And so they do monitor ISPs. If you look at all the fine print, which nobody does, they monitor all of the incoming and outgoing packets, like to and from all of their customers, just to make sure things aren't awry. And they'll kind of let you know if there's a virus on your network, because they'll do some interesting things to lock you down. If there's a botnet from your house, they'll let you know because they can track that. But yeah, private browsing, incognito browsing, it helps with some cookies. It doesn't keep a history. But other than that, all it's really done is kind of made us, security through obscurity isn't really a thing. So we can't be secure by just sort of obscuring. So privacy is not a security concept, right? Privacy is really kind of a legal compliance concept. And so if you think about it, we signed a contract with the ISP, so the data from us to them we don't have any say over anyway. Now, it's our private right as citizens, possibly, you know, if we have legislation passed to have that data anonymized. And that's why I like VPNs, because I can turn the VPN on directly from my computer, or you can configure it on your router, like at the edge of your, like the Bell router that you have even, or Eastlink or Rogers or Shaw, whoever you may be using. And then you can have an end-to-end encryption, which means that they cannot read those packets and from the point where you start the VPN and to the server. So, you know,
okay.
Nord, VPN Unlimited, like CyberGhost, just to name a few, like more commercial VPNs, like Nord has had issues. They all have very similar security issues and privacy concerns, but you know, to what level do we need? For most of us, this is enough.
Okay. So in answer to that is yes, they see everything, yes, regardless of if you've got it on the private browsing mode. Now, the next question that's come up, I actually found some stuff out recently that I found quite interesting. That's probably because I was not so au fait with the process of doing this, but it's in regards to the GPS function on your smartphone. So the question is, turning off the GPS function of your smartphone prevents any tracking of your phone's location. True or false? Now, I think this is true. But there's another element to this, is there not?
So if you turn off the software, so what you're doing is you're basically hitting the little GPS icon on your phone screen, which is supposed to go and turn off the hardware, right? The GPS hardware. But it doesn't necessarily do that, because maybe you want to have it turn on and maybe it wants to have you turn it on quickly, so it puts it into a sleep. Or yes, maybe it just says, don't use it. So, and I think that's probably what... That's a really good question. You got me thinking about that.
See, that's what I was thinking. I mean,
I want to say that the answer is actually so false. It does not, like, you can still be tracked that way, especially, now that I'm actually thinking about it and how it makes sense, the answer to this is false.
Okay, fair enough. So I answered with false. Now, my intriguing thing that people can do if they are as sad as I am wanting to know where I've been is when I went into my locations on my iPhone, for example. So you go into privacy, then location services. I'm pretty sure if you find it, then go into system services, and then you can go into something called significant locations. Have you seen this function as of yet, Justin?
So I have. So very similar. Okay. So in Android, like, you can go into settings, and depending on your phone, obviously, settings, and then like you've got a location, and you can obviously see. So because location is one of those permissions that everybody cares about, they basically developed an option to be able to show only the location information, and like what options have access to your location during what points in time. So like, I choose generally this application should only use my location when I actually have it open. Because some of the software actually runs in the background that we use on a day-to-day basis, even when we don't have it running or open. And some of that functionality means that it could be pinging a location back and forth if it has access.
Okay. Because I just find it quite interesting, because I look through these locations and I think, I don't know where that is. And then I find out that it's actually my office and I've been there 46 times. That kind of makes sense. So that was just,
I always turn
if you haven't
off
tried
the,
it.
The location history. I always do that. That's just a habit of mine.
Well, this is the thing. See, I didn't know about it, but I'm one of the people that finds it quite cool. But I say to everybody, just have a look, because you'll realize just how many times you go into that shop and spend money when you think you say to people, oh, I don't go there that much. I've been to one shop 18 times in the last 2 weeks, and I say to Katie, oh, I don't go in there that much. So yeah, it's one of those things that you'll know just how much you do stuff. Now, next question, Justin. This is something we spoke about a couple of different times. It's about public Wi-Fi. Okay. If a public Wi-Fi network, such as in an airport or cafe, requires a password to access, is it generally safe to use that network for sensitive activities such as online banking?
Definitely not without a VPN on your device. So like a VPN on your phone, if you're going to, so you'd connect to the insecure wireless internet, and then you would turn on your VPN, which would create a secure connection between your phone and the VPN server, then you have that trust, but otherwise no.
Okay. But yeah, that's what I thought. Now, the next question, we've been talking about VPN a lot. This is, what kind of cybersecurity risks can be minimized by using a virtual private network, VPN? Use of insecure Wi-Fi networks, key logging, de-anonymization by network operators, phishing attacks, or the answer that we've had every time, not sure.
Oh, I got distracted. There was definitely a lot of the first one. What was the first answer?
So use of insecure Wi-Fi networks. The next one was key logging.
It was definitely
next one, the de-anonymization by network operators, and final answer. Well, it's not the final. The final one is not sure, but the next one is phishing attacks. I think it's the first one.
Definitely the first one. We're going to go with that one.
Okay. Okay. So this is the last question. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens now. So it says get our results. Now, we actually scored better than 91% of the public. I don't actually know how good that data is, but we'll see. It's not actually showing us what we got. Oh, no, here we go. So everything that we answered, we got correct. Or you answered, you got correct. But this is actually quite scary, because it shows out of all the people to have taken this quiz, it shows just what percentage answered things correctly and wrongly. Okay? Now, the URL question, 75% of people that took this quiz answered correctly, which is great. The VPN question, however, only 10% answered that question correctly. So they're not too sure why. I mean, to me, when I first heard of what a VPN is, I just thought, great, I can watch Netflix from a different country. Because that's what people are kind of selling it as. All these YouTube influencers that are, oh, this video, just to tell you, is sponsored by NordVPN. That's all they are saying to you. So you don't actually know the value of using a VPN. So I think it's good that we had that discussion. So, I mean, obviously next week we've got to up the game a little bit, and I'm going to have to get a better quiz for you because you smashed that.
Let's do it. Yeah, I enjoyed that. Okay. I think the collaboration, I like that if we had that works.
I think so. Now, obviously, there's a few different things that are going on at the moment for you and I individually, but together, obviously, we've got this morning cyber.
Yes.
We've got the social media contest that's going on. Do you want to just remind everybody when that's done?
Yeah, so that'll be not this episode, but actually the day that this episode goes out will be the last day to sign up for the social media. Then it will be closed, and we'll be doing the draw the next episode. And you'll get some sweet morning cyber swag, which I'm super excited about.
Yes, they will. So I think the best thing to do is the way that we'll handle it is we have this kind of generator in which we'll find out just who has followed the Instagram, followed the LinkedIn, and what was the other one? Followed morning
Facebook.
The Facebook, yes. So whoever's done all of that, then we'll be able to find out who it was. And I think you've got some sort of gadget that will tell us that. But the other things that I wanted to discuss was, obviously, Morning Cyber is just one of the podcasts that we're doing at the moment. We have a couple of other things going, and we're actually looking out to see if anybody would be interested in being a part of the Morning Media Company. I suppose, Justin, is the best way to explain it, isn't it?
That's perfectly the best way to explain it. That's right. We're looking for just people who are passionate about their topic,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what their topic is. And
yeah,
we want to talk to you, have a conversation, and we can go from there.
Yeah, and I think the best way to say it, if you've ever wanted to ramble into a microphone for 45 minutes straight once a week and hope that people listen to you, then great, because we can help you do that. And we would love to have you as part of our Morning Media team. We have Instagram accounts for the Morning Media Company, as well as obviously the Morning Cyber Instagram account. And we will be able to set up a few more different Instagram accounts. I have one person that's interested, a very huge soccer fan. And to me, it's football, but he says soccer. And he'll be hosting the Morning Soccer. So that'll be kind of the touch point for everybody to go and get their soccer news about transfers and this upcoming transfer window and stuff like that. And I know, Justin, you're keen on a baseball podcast as well. Now, I think the kind of basis of that is to just get people interested. There's a couple of other things that I'm kind of on the lookout for the moment. Personally, Justin, if it's all right to plug a couple of things, I suppose. I'm in the process of working on a couple of different roles, obviously being in the recruitment world and headhunting world. And if there is anybody that's listening that knows of anybody or is themselves a sale point developer based in Toronto or based remote in the US that is kind of got a strong background in liaising directly with clients and customers, or if you are a CyberArk trustee, then get in contact with me through Cyberforce2020 on Instagram, or just follow me on connect with me on LinkedIn and then follow the Cyberforce page. And I'll see what I can do. I'm looking at doing a bit of a referral scheme for that. And then I'm actually also looking at hiring somebody, Justin. I don't think we've discussed this yet.
It's
come up today. I'm looking at getting two people to join me at Cyberforce. I'm on the lookout for a recent graduate to be based in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. So if you're not here, but you'd want to be here, then we can help you move here to join the team. And then I'm also looking for someone that's maybe had 1 to 2 years of IT recruitment that's looking for their next role. Now, I understand COVID has kind of forced some recruiters to be put onto furlough or they have been made redundant. So just feel free to reach out to me. I'd love to have a conversation as to how we can work together as the Cyberforce team grows. Lots of different roles on the go at the moment, and open to anybody who is interested in IT recruitment or has a background in dealing with clients and sourcing candidates. Great.
And so if I were interested in that, what would be the best maybe social areas to go about getting more information or contacting you?
Well, I mean, if you were interested, Justin, I think we could have a conversation. But no, if anybody is interested, just send me an email. The email address to send it to is joe@cyberforcenow.com. So that's joe@cyberforcenow.com. And the other things that you can do is just send me a message on LinkedIn, and or just even send a message to the Morning Cyber page. I'll pick it up at some point, and we can set up a call and have a discussion and see if it'll be the right move for you. Always open to having conversations, because even if this role isn't the best for you, I can help find you a new job, and that's a guarantee. I'll help you as much as I can to find you a new job. I may be able to, I might not, but I'll try my best. So yeah, that's kind of all I needed to say in that regard, Justin. How about you? What would you like to end it with today?
I would work for you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. It's one of those really, like, where having been through the experience of being a trainee recruiter,
mm-hmm.
then becoming a consultant, and then having the opportunity to be mentored by the people that I have been along the way, it's provided me with a good outset. Like, to be honest, I didn't know much about IT before coming into the recruitment world. You learn a lot about different sectors by recruiting because you talk to so many people on a daily basis. And if you've ever wanted to be involved in IT, but your mindset is not that of which is technical, because there's lots of people that are like that, recruitment is a brilliant way to go to learn about a sector and not have to be in the sector, but just be involved with it. It's a really difficult thing to explain, but it's a sublime kind of feeling. So, yeah, I mean, Justin, it would be great if you could work for me. I think you'd have a great time. We've placed quite a few different people, and it would be good fun. But no, if anybody's interested, joe@cyberforcenow.com, and we'll set up some calls.
Yeah, and I would challenge everyone to just go into their devices before the next episode. Take a look at your location settings. I don't care what you do. You be you. But just take a look to see what information and locations your phone has and see how much Google and Apple track you every second of every day. I think when we understand that, it helps just understanding the conversations around how Google and Apple are, listening to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's a lot more complex than that. So yeah, check your location settings. Leave them on. Mine's on, but just make sure you know what's being tracked when it's being tracked, and make sure you ensure the right information is being tracked.
Sounds good to me. Well, Justin, thanks. Justin of Rogue Security. And I've been Joe Flower of Cyberforce. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope you learned a little something. And check your location settings.
See you next week.
Speak soon.